Dann begrüße ich jetzt Ram im Studio. Hallo.
Hello, hello.
Du machst Modellierungen zu Infektionszahlen. Jetzt Corona ist natürlich gerade aktuell, aber hast du das schon vorher gemacht, vielleicht mit anderen Infektionen?
Nein, eigentlich, ich bin grundsätzlich ein Modellierer. Ja, yeah, so I am a data scientist and I have experience in modeling. So anything that comes to observing data and making predictions based on that data and creating observational models for the data, I have been doing for a while now. So I have never worked in the field of epidemiology mm-hmm. before, but I have worked a lot with real-world data.
Real-world data.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a thing, right? It's interesting because you have, in data science, you have data sets coming in from controlled circumstances where you perform an experiment in a lab. And then you generate tons of data. This data is usually clean and it comes in and you can so forth use it. You probably need to clean it up a bit, but you can already use it to make some inferences from your experiments. But in data science, there's an entire category of data sets called real world data, which is data collected from the real world, right?
Okay.
That happened outside the lab. And such data is usually very messy and noisy and collected in so many different ways. And like, for example, everything that Google collects on you is real world data. All the data that is collected in a hospital mm-hmm. is real world data. Sometimes they are more controlled than others, right? But these are not experiments. Mm. And that is one of the biggest problems in working with this data because mm-hmm. you don't know the bias. Like, I'll give you an example mm-hmm. right now, right? Imagine you go to the hospital mm-hmm. as a patient and they do about 10 different tests on you. Now, first of all, there are different layers of abstraction when it comes to these data sets, right? You will have the ultimate number that we are interested in is, like, for example, if they take some of your blood and get some of that, test your sugar levels, for example, mm-hmm. right? Now, what is important to know is what is the method they used, and according to that method, what is the amount of sugar they measured in your blood, and what were the conditions? Did you eat before? When did you eat last? Basically, for every data point that is measured, there's about like 5 or 6 surrounding metadata that mm-hmm. you might have to capture, but in the real world, it'll never be captured perfectly. So you'll take all of these data points without context, where context means the metadata that surrounds the data point, and then you put it all together in a data set and treat them as equal. Like, for example, the blood sugar content of a person who has eaten 2 hours ago cannot be and should not be compared with the blood sugar content of a person who has eaten 10 hours ago. So right. There are very specific times, like, for example, when they want to measure your blood sugar, they tell you, hey, don't eat. But that's just a very simple example. Now, it becomes more and more complicated as you measure more and more complicated things. Mm. And then you put all of that together in a data set, and then you try to make sense out of all of these thousands of data points. It's difficult.
Ja, das klingt auch ein bisschen chaotisch, also total unberechenbar auch mit den ganzen Daten. Also wenn ich mir jetzt vorstelle, wenn du sagst, du hast vorher noch nie in der Epidemiologie gearbeitet, mm-hmm. was war dann dein Themenfeld vorher?
I've worked in many different fields. I have worked in fMRI analysis. It is more statistical analysis rather than machine learning. And then I also worked in modeling CHO cells. So CHO cells are genetically modified cells, mm-hmm. which actually can produce antibodies. So these are monoclonal antibodies that are used in various different therapeutic areas, like okay. to treat cancer, for example. Mm-hmm. So antibodies are very complex molecules and you can't chemically create them. You use organisms, you mm. use like little cells and genetically modify them to be able to create these antibodies. So I used to model those cells and try to be able to predict how they would behave under different circumstances. And I have also had a lot of experience analyzing language data, where you're looking at free language and trying to algorithmically get meaning out of it or do something interesting with it. A good example, this is called natural language processing. A good example for this is that when you're typing out a mail in Gmail, for example, it automatically extends. If you say thanks, and it'll complete it as and regards. That's done using some various prediction algorithms, using data sets that use natural language, right? So I have a lot of experience there too. So I'm basically more or less like a jack of all trades. I just am good at looking at data coming in from different sensors and making some sort of sense of it.
Manchmal denke ich mir, es ist so ein bisschen wie so ein Orakel, ne? So ein Modell. Ne? Man versucht irgendwie eine Prognose zu geben und die kann dann auch total falsch sein.
I mean, I wouldn't go as far as saying it's like an oracle, but in some ways it is like that a little bit, in the sense that you really need to know when you're analyzing a data set, you really need to know what the bias in that data set is. You really need to understand very, very carefully. Okay, let me take a step back. What we're really good at in science is actually building observational models, right? We observe some things, right? Mm. Measure some data from it, and then use that data to build a narrative on what has already happened. And we're really good at that. We can very, very usefully say why some events happened, why others did not. Mm. So we can already see the past and then generate knowledge from it in a very, very efficient way.
Yeah.
What we are not good at, especially in real-world data, is trying to predict what will come after. Because predicting what will come after implies you have total understanding of the system that you're studying. Mm. And total understanding of any real-world system, be it a small cell that I was trying to model, which was under very controlled circumstances, believe it or not, and that was already difficult, but try to extrapolate that to the real world where modeling human behavior or trying to understand why we do some things, or it's just a really, really complicated world.
Mm.
However, having said that, it is the best we have, right? It is better for sure than listening to an oracle.
Yeah.
it's better than for sure listening to someone tell you based on no evidence that hydroxychloroquine is good for you, right? It is the best we have.
Mm.
It is not perfect, and we know that. I mean, imagine you are a decision maker at a really high level, right? You want to be able to take decisions that you think are the best for the people you're responsible for, and therefore you want to listen to the people who know what they're talking about.
Also jetzt nochmal gemünzt auf Covid-19, da muss man ja immer ganz viele Faktoren mit bedenken, wie du gerade ausgeführt hast. Ne? Ich habe dann immer von anderen Modellierern gehört, dass sie zum Beispiel die Faktoren, wir schließen jetzt die Schulen und dann sehen wir in 2 Wochen vielleicht einen Effekt. Also dass das so ein paar Faktoren sind, die man halt mit einberechnen kann. Hattest du mit sowas auch zu tun?
Yeah, sure. I mean, what is very clear, so without going into too much details, most of the data that we're looking at right now is data from the United States. And what is clear is that any decision you take right now, the outcomes of those decisions will not be seen. I think 2 weeks is also a very conservative estimate. 3, maybe even 4 weeks down the line. So if you open up today and then tomorrow already, because we live in this constant 24-hour cycle, there'll be people, 24-hour news cycle, people will already tomorrow, somebody will come on YouTube, see, they didn't increase because it opened up. All this closing down was of no use. But because in these 3 or 4 weeks, these people have to generate some buzz. But the real outcomes you'll only see not even 2 weeks, maybe 3, 4 weeks down the line.
Right? Und was sind dann die Faktoren, die ihr mit einberechnet?
Various different things, right? When was emergency declared? When did schools close? We're also looking at some movement data of how people are moving from place to place. And we are also looking at data that is coming out of various different data aggregators. There are already a lot of different dashboards out there, which are giving very fine-grained data on, for example, how prepared a specific area is, how many beds do they have, how many hospital beds do they have, how many ventilators do they have. There are about 100 different factors like that we're looking at. The problem, of course, is to collect them. How do you reasonably say that you trust this measure that you got out of it? I mean, if you're trying to build it at a very, very local level, how do you know for sure that this date that the schools closed is actually when they closed? Like, another thing that would be interesting is when were public gathering bans instituted, right? We're also looking at the average income of people living in this area. Everything that we can actually put in there that we reasonably think that we can, first of all, gather and we reasonably think might have an effect on how the disease is spreading in this particular area, we put into that model.
Nur das menschliche Verhalten ist dann manchmal halt nicht vorhersehbar wahrscheinlich. Ne?
Right, yeah.
Und lag dir schon mal richtig falsch mit solchen Modellierungen? Also richtig
yeah,
daneben?
For sure, ja. Right. I mean, like I said, right, it is easy to see what happened before and explain it than to be able to predict, right? What you should also understand is no person who's modeling these things is going to has an agenda. I mean, there is no reason for a person like me who's working on such a project to go one way or the other, to influence it one way or the other, because it's a huge project. There are about 100 different people working on the project that I'm working on. It's not even my main job. My main job is in a completely different field. And because this is an emergency, I'm working about 25% of my time or 30% of my time on this particular project, which is like a company-wide project. And there are about 100 or 120 people from different parts of the company that are collaborating together from different places in the world. Now, for sure, there are predictions that are completely, completely wrong. But it is also interesting for us to know how they were wrong so that we can go back and fix the model to be more indicative or to be better at being able to predict. That brings us to another point, right? In experimental science in the lab, when you want to study the effect of a particular intervention that you're doing, like there's a system, right? And you're trying to see what effect a particular action will have on the system. Then in the lab, what you can do is you can have a system where you do this action and you can have another system where you don't do this action and you can compare these two things. And you'll get a reasonably good idea of what this particular one action, what sort of effect it had. But you cannot do that in real life.
No.
There is no split testing in real life. You can't do that. Mm-hmm. So you can just have a good estimate based on reason, and you can say you're doing your best. But at the same time, it's not always going to be right. I definitely, definitely can assure you, it will save lives eventually, and it has already.
Wenn du jetzt sagst, die meisten Daten, die ihr sammelt, sind aus den USA, dann frage ich mich halt auch, die Realitäten sind ja ganz verschieden, regional, auf nationaler Ebene. Die Leute verhalten sich anders, die Maßnahmen sind anders, das Gesundheitssystem sieht anders aus. Was weiß ich, in Venezuela oder in Mexiko ist der informelle Sektor so groß, dass es keinen Lockdown geben kann, weil die Leute dann verhungern. Wie berücksichtigt ihr diese verschiedenen Lebensrealitäten und wie wirkt sich das dann auf das Modell aus?
So right now we're not there yet, to be honest, because we have to like see if it works in one place. And the United States is already a good microcosm of the world. It has everything. There are places in the United States that are much better organized than the best place in, I don't know, Sweden, right? And there are also places in the United States that are as worse as, I don't know, the poorest regions in the world. So the United States is a really good microcosm of the world. And if it works there, I think it'll work throughout the world. That's why the United States is a good place to start. Simply because it has all of this diversity. We think of the United States as one country. It's not. Mm. It's actually a union of 50 countries, and each place has its own diversity built into it. And even in each place, there is you can very clearly see that this has nothing to do with the project that I'm working on. But I'm a curious type, right? I looked at some of the data coming in from the United States for my own purposes, and it is very clear to me that you are more likely to die if you're poorer. There is no doubt at all.
Das hat sich auch bestätigt, ne?
Right, yeah. And this has also possibly nothing to do with the current lack of money, but it has everything to do with your previous history as a poor person. Being poor is injurious to health. We should have that disclaimer. Yeah, and it's also very clear your geography, the region where you live, also has a huge influence on how likely it is that you'll survive or you're not.
Klima wahrscheinlich auch, ne?
Darüber kann ich nichts sagen.
Okay.
Possibly, for sure. Like, for example, it is known for a fact that it is difficult for the virus to survive in hot and humid conditions, right? But if you look at India, it's exploding there. Because what's happening in India, I think, and this is not based on any paper that I've read, I think what's happening is in India, because I come from India, I know how it is there, it is very difficult to socially distance yourself because it's really, really a crowded place. And therefore, the virus does not need to survive outside of the body for too long. It's just person-to-person transmission that keeps it going. Because it's very difficult to socially distance, any good effect that the climate might have on the virus not being able to spread so easily is completely lost.
Ah, das ist einfach raus, das berücksichtigt
ihr gar nicht. And that's another thing, right, when it comes to modeling. I see that independent of the data set. If you just look at the data set itself, you would expect a place like India to have much less. If you just look at the data points themselves, just without any context, without any pre-knowledge of the kind of place India is, you would expect India to not have that big a spread. But because you know this context, then you're able to say, yeah, that kind of makes sense, that it would spread. And that's why even before they had any cases, India did the right thing of shutting the entire country down. In some places, you know, had a lot of horrible, horrible consequences for a lot of people.
Wie sieht denn dann deine tägliche Arbeit aus? Sitzt du einfach vorm Rechner und fügst Daten zusammen oder wie muss man sich das vorstellen?
Irgendwie so. That and a lot of meetings.
Okay.
Yeah. So mostly it's trying to, so in my day-to-day work right now, I'm working more with language data, where I am trying to do several things actually. So I work in safety. It is extremely important for every company to have a safety department, especially a pharma company. What we do is we try to constantly monitor the safety of our products. Any company should do that. It is actually Gesetz. Not only the safety of the products that are being tested, but also safety of the products that are already out in the market. And therefore, a lot of these reports come in the form of natural language, and you want to be able to automatically understand and extract valuable information from this natural language. And while it might seem easy for a human being to do that, it is immensely difficult for a computer to do that, but it's becoming more and more easier as time goes on. That's what I deal with on a regular basis, looking at language data and trying to extract meaningful scientific information and evidence from it. I don't have anything else to say except perhaps everyone who's out there trying to model outcomes in this, model outcomes or predict outcomes in this pandemic. I know most of the kind of people who work are trying to do this, and I believe they have the best interest in the world to try and come up with the best possible outcomes. And there's a lot of misinformation out there right now, and also a lot of conspiracy theories. From personal experience also, I know most of these theories come from a place of fear. We're all afraid right now. Mm. And when we're afraid, when a person like me comes and tells you a complicated idea, it is difficult to accept that. But the world is really, really a complicated place. And anyone who's giving you simple answers in the form of conspiracy theories is just basically either deluded themselves or lying to you. The best answer that we have right now is we don't know, but we are trying our best to know more and trying our best to understand things better. This might not be perfect. It'll take some time before everything comes back to normal. But please, please, please just ask yourself if the answer to any question related to the coronavirus sounds simple. If it's simple, then it's the wrong answer because it's complicated.